You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies.
This is AfterBuzz TV's Sherlock After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Sherlock After Show.
Hey there, Sherlock fans. You know what time it is, or do you? You may be personally surprised. You thought that the season was over. Well, guess what? You're right, but you're also wrong, because this is AfterBuzz TV's Sherlock After Show. We're going back to the start. We had so much fun recapping Season 3, and I think you all enjoyed it as much as we did. So we're going way back to the start. We're recapping Seasons 1 and 2 over the next few weeks. So excited to be doing that. I'm Matt Lieberman. Joining me, of course, the fantastic panel, all back. Yael Teagle's here.
Hello.
Megan Salinas is here.
Hey, everyone.
And Marissa Serafini's here.
What's up, guys?
Oh, my God. You're on the ones and twos.
Again.
And you're on the panel. This is amazing. What a wall-to-wall.
We're all back.
Room full of talent.
We're all freaking back.
I know. Awesome. So we're doing A Study in Pink, which, you know, I hadn't watched in a little while.
Yeah.
And especially after just watching Season 3 and seeing everything that came out in that season, it's so much fun to go back and see what the show was like at the start. And we've come a long way, people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was amazing. Even just seeing John walking on that cane was like, I can't believe we've come that far. They've changed each other so much. How'd you feel watching the episode?
There were so many little things that they said that I was like, oh, this is hilarious, because in Season 3, they get to that. There was a joke about Christmas at their house, and I was like, oh, we get to see that.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fun to see it.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see, like you were saying, to go back to the beginning. Because Sherlock himself has come a long way in terms of, like, letting people in and warming up to people. And it was kind of bizarre, almost, in a way, to go back to square one and be like, wait, why is he being I mean, he's still kind of mean, but why is he being so mean to Molly and everything like that? And why isn't he inviting people over
for
dinner?
Well, some would argue that he's meaner to Molly now than he was then, because, you know, back then he didn't realize the depths of her feelings. Now he knows about it and chooses to ignore it, or actually not ignore it, taunt her about it. Marissa?
I agree. I liked going back after watching Season 3 and then everything that's changed. And it shows me just like how people really behave towards Sherlock at the beginning.
Yeah.
We see a lot of people, they're kind of condescending and not really accepting of Sherlock. They're like, he's a freak and all these different weird things, and he's like,
he's a
borderline
psychopath.
Yeah, psychopath.
Yeah.
But then we see in Season 3, after he supposedly died, how everyone reacted to his death. So just the contrasting viewpoints on how they perceive Sherlock from Season 1 to now is mm-hmm. completely radically
and
different.
I think that says a lot, too, because I tend to forget that, you know, Season 3 picks up. He has been gone for 2 years. And so everybody, you know, had to grieve. And so it's very interesting coming back to the point where people are annoyed to have him around,
yeah,
where they haven't, like, had to not have him around.
Well, what it speaks to, really, is the relationship between him and John Watson and how that affects who he is. Because, you know, it's not just that he's solving all these cases, because he solved cases long before John ever came onto the picture. But John humanizing him and helping him, you know, get a firmer grasp on more of his humanity, get a firmer grasp on his sense of humor, get a firmer grasp on what it's like to relate to other people and not just see them as chess pieces. It really helped people understand who he was and really come to love him. You know, you look at how Detective Inspector Lestrade, but long before we call him Greg, mm-hmm. is treating him here. He's listening more to Anderson and Donovan than he is to Sherlock or John Watson. You know, they definitely come a long way, and you kind of forget how far they've come, because in Season 2, there's already such a drastic change in how they feel about him. Granted, it doesn't save him during the Reichenbach fall,
right.
But, you know, it's interesting. there are very few series that produce as few episodes as Sherlock does. It's three movies a year or every 2 years. And it doesn't really leave a lot of room for evolution in these characters. Every season we come back and the game has changed. The stakes have changed. These people have changed a great deal. We don't see a gradual change as you might on, say, Elementary. We are given rapid, drastic change because we have so little screen time to be able to soak this stuff in.
Yeah, and it jumps ahead a little bit, too, because, like, just going back to season three, between episode two and episode three, Molly's engagement is off, and it's very interesting to, you know, kind of just jump ahead and kind of skip that and have stuff like that happen off screen. But you're absolutely right. There's so little time to get to everything that's how a lot of stuff does have to be explained.
I loved seeing John flirt with Moriarty's attaché.
Mycroft's
attaché. Oh, my God. What's happening to me? It's late here. It's late-ish. It's late enough that I can make mistakes. Don't hate me.
Well, and they do a fake-out. When I was first watching the show, I thought it was
Moriarty.
Okay, that's very interesting. They're showing Moriarty right out of the gate. I had no idea that they were going to... that they were showing that this was Mycroft, because I was thinking that she was Irene Adler, you know, acting as a liaison between the two of them. And I think that's exactly what everybody wanted, you know, what they all wanted everybody to think. So
yeah, I think that's what everyone, because Sherlock's been around for years and has already built a fan base before Sherlock. And I think that's what the fans expected, but I loved how they cleverly set that up for us in a completely different way. So it's something to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we talk about the way that Mycroft was standing when John
How long do you think he was standing at that jaunty angle leaning on his umbrella cane?
I feel like he had been there for maybe 30 minutes, just like, when are they going to get here? Where are they? Why is she texting it? They're still in the car. Why haven't they arrived?
Mm-hmm.
Just, I'm going to stand in this perfect
pose. I think about that with Bond villains, like, you know, with the swivel chair where they turn around as soon as the person enters.
Yes.
It's like, how long did you have to sit in the dark?
But it's not just standing at the perfect pose. It's like every 3 minutes, someone has to come out and wet the ground again so that it's sopping wet when they get there.
Yes.
Slick and just bouncing all that light back up off the water on the floor.
Yeah. I'm glad other people appreciated that stance.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's just one of the things that I loved is towards the end when Mycroft and Sherlock are finally together and we realize who Mycroft is. And Sherlock's like, you've been gaining weight. And Mycroft's like, lost weight, actually. And I immediately flash to Mycroft on the treadmill, like a damp, plucked chicken.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. With the jokes that we had to wait 3 seasons and 15 years for it to pay off. It was that.
Yeah.
But I think that was just a clever, little, subtle way of showing the difference between Sherlock and Mycroft. Mm-hmm. That they are completely different people, even though they are related. There's a difference between them.
Yeah. Yeah. Have any of you gotten the chance? It's only available on the DVDs and Blu-rays of season one of Sherlock. But have you watched the original pilot? Not every fan may know that the pilot that we know as A Study in Pink is actually a combination of reshoots and original footage from the original pilot for Sherlock, which is nowhere near as good. It has all the promise, but it doesn't have any of the energy.
I'm trying to remember because I've seen the first episode of Sherlock so many times, but I have seen episode one on the DVD.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to remember the differences, but I really don't.
Well, maybe
they kind of all blend.
Maybe
together.
We can do a little mini-sode where we compare the two after we've gone through these two seasons. But it's amazing how fully formed the show feels right out of the box. The characters are very well written. The style of stories that they want to do are very, very, clear. The visual style is in its infancy, but it's very clear that they want to do something dramatic and very visual. But here, what later in the series are like clever uses of video footage, or, you know, slow motion or transitions between scenes. Here, it's a lot of use of photographs for transitions, quick cuts of street signs in the taxi cab chase sequence.
Establishing shots.
Yeah, establishing shots. the style of the show is in its infancy, but the editing is still just as sharp. And it's really, really cool to see how far it's come in the three years since. I mean, when did this come out? 2011?
Yeah, it started, I believe, 2010, actually.
I think it was 2010.
2010.
Yeah, 2010.
Yeah, it's 2014 now. It's kind of crazy how far we've come in, you know, a little over 3 years.
Yeah, and even the cinematography, too. I mean, it's always been great from the beginning. And I noticed going back to season one, there's a lot of close-ups, extreme close-ups on eyes and pupils and face, some facial parts and stuff that are really, really up close. But it still adds to all the deductions that Sherlock makes with characters and stuff.
And the director of the pilot, Paul McGuigan, at the time, had was really only known for his movie Lucky Number 11.
Oh, great movie.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same director.
Same director, and he very much established this quick-cut style, lots of extreme close-ups, creative and inventive uses of the visual language to really get across a lot of dense information and a lot of character information, which, you know, they just pack it all in there. It's so great to see it again. Now, at the top of this episode, you know, it's funny looking back how much time we have before we even see Sherlock Holmes. It's like a solid 15 to 20 minutes.
And it's all about John.
Mm-hmm. Well, because John is the audience. He's our entry into the world of Sherlock. And you're kind of realizing how boring and light his life is before he meets him, before he really gets to be part of this war, this underground war that's going on, and how bored he is. He's so frustrated, John. Like, as much as John has helped Sherlock, Sherlock has helped John a hundredfold.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, definitely. They need each other. Like, John is there to keep Sherlock in line, so to speak, and to humanize him. But John, and I think we talked about this a lot with him picking Mary, he likes the danger. He likes the excitement. He likes getting into trouble, even if he doesn't realize it.
Yeah.
He totally likes the drama.
Yeah. He loves the drama, and he needs something to write about. His blog at this point, empty.
Yeah, and I think, again, you said John is the audience, but John is the voice of the audience. He asks all the questions that the audience is thinking of. He's the one that expresses all those questions that we have, and he's the one that introduces us to Sherlock in a way that helps the audience understand Sherlock the way he sees it as a regular, not really regular, but like as a civilian viewpoint, which I think that's a good thing with this complicated relationship that they have. It's just he helps the audience understand Sherlock.
One of the things that I love most in terms of contrasting this against the episodes in season two and season three is how intimate and quiet of a story A Study in Pink is. You know, a large part of it is about establishing these characters and their relationship to each other, but the mystery is relatively small. We have four people who have committed suicide based on someone else taking them to a place that they shouldn't have been and basically talking them to death, getting them to pick a pill.
A fun way to refer to it, yeah.
That's basically what I'm doing to you guys.
I was going to say, I feel like you would be great at this.
And to all of the audience out there, because they all don't know. I know that you love me and that you'd never think that I was talking you to death. You would have told me that by now, right? Right, fans? Right, family? Right, Lieberfans? That's what I call my fan
base. That your trending fan base.
That's
now.
My trending fan base that I use only by myself in my mirrors.
Lieberfans.
Lieberfans. It's going to be
like
a thing.
They have fins.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds
of a
like.
A Lieberfin club?
No, there's no such thing as a Lieberfin club because it's too big to be a club. It's a nation.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a sensation.
It's
that
a
just
sensation.
Got weird.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to quickly talk about iTunes so that we never have to address the outside world ever again, and we can just talk about this show after this plug. Hey, fans, here's the thing. You've been going on iTunes. You've been doing what we asked and giving us the reviews, the ratings, and guess what? It made all the difference in the world because it got you more Sherlock episodes. If we didn't have the proof that the fan base was really on board with this, we would not have been able to do all these extra episodes. We've been consistently number one or number two since we launched, and it's a huge, huge deal. It's kind of rocking several worlds at once. So, what do we ask of you now? Don't stop for anything. You have the power to make a fleet of Sherlock episodes fly from the proverbial hangar, because that's how life works. Life is basically the Air Force. My metaphors have gone to crap in the last few hours. When you do as many shows as we do, you use up a lot of energy and a lot of love. And I'm trying to give every last bit that I have left to you, because you've made this show happen and continue to happen. And I'm also trying to pull up all of your wonderful iTunes reviews, because they make me so, so happy. It really means a lot. Because here's the thing, folks. People don't really realize that you are the only reason that these shows exist. We make them for free because we want to entertain you. You get to watch them or stream them or listen to them on any of your devices. It's pretty incredible. We live in the future. And if you want to give Sherlock the level of respect that it deserves, the level of respect that we try to give it, slap us with a review. Give us a comment. It really does make a difference. It keeps the show searchable, and it keeps us in the top 10, in the top 2, thank you very much, for a solid month. And now?
We'll do ratings from people. I actually have some.
Oh, you have some?
Yeah.
Marissa Serafini.
Thank you to, and I'll just keep go from the most recent to past one that we just did. Thank you to Power_Man77. Just clever. Keep up the good work. 5 Yay. Stars.
Thanks.
Thank you to DrewStar921. They said this show was awesome.
Aww.
Thank you to G Pi Tanza. Fantastic recaps. This is a great podcast. The hosts are funny and the recaps are in depth.
Aww.
And another one. Thank you to Shane JM. Wonderful. Just wonderful.
Aww.
Best AfterBuzz podcast out there. Love the quirkiness of the panel. Love your predictions.
Wow.
Thank you to Rogers Lax 24. Three-peat. I love your clever insight, and it helps me understand the parts of the show that confuse me. Humor mixed with personality makes a great after show.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are awesome.
I love all these reviews. You like quirkiness? You think it's the best show out there? Rad. I also love Rogers Lax 74 is a lady. And you wouldn't have known that necessarily from the name, but everyone rocks. You rock. Go you. Keep the reviews coming. Keep us fueled.
Yeah, and just 3 more. Thank you to Greek Cheek 20, a.k.a. Joe Lewis, Alice 955.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And you guys
thank you
are awesome.
To everybody who comments on YouTube and everybody who tweets us.
Yeah,
you guys just make our day when you do.
I tell you what, I love tweets. I like getting them. I like responding to them. I like getting weird photographs. I like getting gifs.
What?
I also like weird photographs. I just want to say.
And you know what? Just being a little bit of a producer here, will give you a little insight about our Sherlock After Show.
Ooh.
I know for a fact our Sherlock After Show just in one day gets over 100,000 downloads.
Wow.
130,000.
130,000.
130,000 downloads just in one day.
Oh my
Thank
God.
You.
So,
yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Sherlock fans, you guys are awesome.
You
Thank
are
you so
the
much.
Best.
Just yeah. a little tidbit from my side.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. We have locked you deep in our hearts, and I hope that you've done the same. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Let's talk about the taxi driver and his little game that he plays. I've always loved this character. He's so kind of creepy and chilling, and he's a very quiet kind of super genius. He doesn't need to shout it from a rooftop like Moriarty. He doesn't need everyone in the room to know like Sherlock. He's someone who's very, very smart, never really used it to forward his life at all, and now facing the very end is willing to play the most dangerous game.
I always thought he was a... Oh, wait. Am I waiting?
Nope.
You're not okay. waiting. You were leaning in really close to the mic.
It was what they call a misdirect. Meow.
I always... When I first watched this episode, I was... I always thought he was kind of a weird mix between Jigsaw and Vicini from The Princess Bride.
That's so funny.
Because when
yeah.
he pulls out the two things of poison, I was like, they're both poison! He spent the last 5 years developing an immunity to Iocane powder!
That thought definitely crossed my mind.
Yeah? Have they made Iocane into nice, digestible capsules?
I imagined in whatever year this took place
sure,
in, 2010. Sure,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, we've come a long way. We can synthesize Iocane powder and
sure.
put it into nice little capsules.
No.
But and actually, and I was talking to Yell about this, but it actually did feel a lot like Saw 2, if you've ever watched Saw 2, because a good portion of Saw 2 is just Jigsaw sitting down and having a discussion with a detective. So it, like, that scene in particular at the end between the cabbie and Sherlock felt a lot like that to me.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of a tense moment because this cab driver is using Sherlock's ego against him. You know, Sherlock is able to walk away. He, you know, he realizes that the gun isn't real. It's just a very elaborate cigarette lighter, to which I state, I can't decide if I want that or not. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore.
What are you going to use the lighter for?
I don't know, for lighting candles.
Then you need it.
A candle lighting gun? Who wouldn't want that? It's everything that I love about my candle lighter, except it's also a gun.
My bad.
Yeah.
Perfect prop to scare away people, though.
Oh, totally.
I mean, it did its purpose.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If you don't look too closely at it, it looks very, very real.
Yeah, but Sherlock should not be fooled. And he wasn't.
He wasn't. And he was ready to walk out the door when the guy's like, you know, so just so I know, what bottle would you have picked? Just so I know if I would have beaten you. And at that, door shut. He's like, no one can beat me. I'm Sherlock Holmes. And I was legitimately, the first time I saw it and even now, terrified for him that he would pick and that he would die. It's the last pill in both bottles. They could both be poisoned. Just like Megan said.
It's the first episode of the series.
I don't care.
Okay. Well, when we first figure out it's the cabbie and he explains how he talks, you know, he talks to people to death, I was instantly reminded of the Trinity Killer on Dexter.
Oh.
Who
good
convinced
pull.
People to commit suicide. The only one that stands out in my mind is the woman that he convinces to jump, who talks to you and makes you feel guilty and grief and tells you your life isn't worth living. And that's where I thought it was.
That's why she scratches Rachel into the floor.
Right. That's what I believed.
Oh, that never clicked with me.
The first time I saw the show, I was positive. I was positive way early on that it was a taxi driver, which really disappointed me that it took Sherlock so long to figure out. The moment that they find that she doesn't have the suitcase and he says it must have been left in a car, and they didn't realize that it was there. What kind of situation would you be in? I was like, a cab. You'd be in a cab.
You've never had someone leave something in your car?
No.
Wow. You lead a charmed life.
I'm actually really disappointed because I left my scarf in my car. You've never left anything behind in your car?
I don't forget anything. I am like an elephant.
But if you think about it, yes, it did take Sherlock a while to get to that point. But if you think about it, this is the first episode. There was character development, character meetings. They were just starting to get to know each other. We were just starting to get to know everyone.
Sure.
And establish all these people. So, yes, they're going to get the acquaintances out of the way and then get to the storyline.
Right.
But what I loved is that how, yes, this is a serial killer. And I don't know if you guys ever watched the show Criminal Minds.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good show. Just saying. They talked about his stressor and and in Criminal Minds it's usually like serial killers have the tendencies of all these things, but it's usually one big outside external source that sets them off on their serial paths.
Mm-hmm.
And this instance for Sherlock, the cab driver, he found out he had cancer. That was his stressor and that was started him on the serial killing.
Actually,
I loved
how
they got to that part.
It was an aneurysm, actually.
Yeah, an aneurysm.
Jigsaw was cancer.
But yeah,
spoilers.
But he realized that he had cancer. He was dying. Mm-hmm. And so just that, knowing that you're dying, that is a big enough stressor for him to go on this serial killing
path.
Right.
And very interesting motivation, too, because for every person that he kills, he gets more money to leave behind for his kids.
Yeah.
And so his whole motivation for doing this not only was, you know, he had nothing to lose, but he wanted to provide for the family that he still
loves.
Well,
let me ask everyone in the room right now. If you were in the position to leave your family behind with some money, you knew that you were dying within the next month, and someone offered you $500,000 for every person you kill before you die, would you take it?
I'm going to go with no.
All I want to know what Yael has to say.
I want to hear Marissa first.
I'm going to go with no, because I have a lot of different things. One, I'm the youngest person in my family, so usually it's the other way around. They would leave money for me. Second of all, I really don't have a lot of money, and plus I wouldn't kill people for that. I think my moral ground is like a lot higher than that.
I know that if, like, not only is it wrong to kill people, first and foremost, I know that if my family ever found out where this money came from, they wouldn't accept it. They would be disgusted, and they would be disappointed in me, and their memory of me, you know, after I'm gone would forever be tainted.
Now I really want to hear what Yael says.
How much is the amount?
$500,000
per person you kill.
I would do it for a lot less.
Aww.
Here's the thing. I would not do it, but I would probably cry myself to sleep thinking about the money that my family could really use if I had. Like, I would cry myself to sleep feeling perversely that I was too weak to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but how badly would you feel if you actually went through it?
Oh, just as bad, but I'd be dead in a month.
See, I don't think I could have that on my conscience, knowing that I killed people for money. I think as fortunate.
You'd be dead in a month.
People, unfortunately, some people actually do that, but it's just I couldn't get myself to do that.
Are these innocent people being killed, or are these like Dexter serial killer type people that we're going after in our final month of life?
I mean, two of them were adulterers.
Adulterers should be put to death?
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying two of the people in this episode were adulterers. Our final victim and our first victim were both adulterers. I mean, granted, we didn't really get into what was going on with the middle two, but that would have been an interesting coincidence.
Does the circumstance like justify the means? Probably not.
There's still innocents who are being killed. So that's not good. Let's not do that.
Yeah, one of them was a kid, like an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah,
or something.
He had so much life left to live. He was going to get his coat, they were going to have a great night, and then he got murdered instead. He could have just stood
a huge bummer.
To death. He was too afraid of being close to his male friend and bridging that gap that he couldn't stand under his umbrella and live.
If only he had been more confident in his sexuality.
More secure in his sexuality, he would still be alive. Let's not judge the dead, especially if they're fake. Okay. One of my favorite things that's planted in this episode, and we saw it bear fruit in the Reichenbach fall, is Sally Donovan's monologue to John, where he's like, you know, he doesn't have friends, and one of these days, just coming and seeing these murders isn't going to be enough for him. He's going to snap and he's going to kill someone. And it's something that has and hasn't been addressed. Everyone around him's reaction has been addressed, that people would suspect him of killing someone. But there still is kind of a nugget of truth in there, in this high-functioning sociopath, and it comes down to what we saw at the end of season three, that when he's pushed to the edge, he'll kill someone if he has to. And I'm wondering how far that goes. How many people would he kill if he had to?
See, and I'm just going back to, again, Criminal Minds, because they kind of touch upon the same things, that they have to think just like the serial killers, but what makes them any more different? What makes them not kill all these people even though they know and how to act the same way as serial killers? It's having that conscience, knowing the good and the bad. And Sherlock is fortunately a good person. Yes, he has some crazy tendencies, but he knows the good and the bad. He knows the good people from the bad people, and that's what stops him from not killing or being on that edge of not killing people.
I think what was very interesting is that the more I watch this episode, the more I've seen the show, I can't help but think, what if there were no murderers in London?
Whoa.
Like, how
that's
bored
kind of a
would
big
he
deal.
Be?
He would be bored. I can't imagine a world without murder. It's kind of amazing. But what's, like, isn't that kind of perverse that I can't imagine a world without murder?
Because, if there was a world without murder, then it'd be utopia. And that's, as we know.
I wouldn't say that a world without murder automatically will cause utopia.
Well, I'm not saying utopia, but it'd be a more ideal world, but that's just not
the
world.
But I'm saying that for Sherlock, he would be bored.
I wonder if in better circumstances, in better circumstances, like if there was less crime in London, if there weren't so many mysteries to be solved, if there wasn't so much work to be done, if he would have taken the Moriarty route and become a consulting criminal instead of a consulting detective.
Right? Fair question.
It is a fair question. You know, look, Sherlock is someone of a massive intelligence who's also got a serious inferiority complex at the hands of his brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he grew up thinking that he was stupid. And I think it's one of the reasons, it's the thing that's going to get him killed, honestly, is the fact that he has this inferiority complex. And one of these days, someone like this taxi driver is going to push that button enough that he does something stupid, that he makes a mistake.
Yeah, he feels such a need to prove he's clever.
Yes.
You know, he has to shout it from the rooftops, "I'm clever, everyone!" You know, he has to
Which
do
is
all
just
these-
such a Moffat-y trait.
Yes.
Yeah.
That you're absolutely right. It's going to be the thing that gets him into trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a world where there's no murder, he would have to do it through crime. He would have to do it in some way that everyone would notice, in the same way that Moriarty does it.
So he's Donovan is kind of right.
Yeah. Kind of, and it's scary how right she is. Well, you know, it's something that isn't going to go away, and it's kind of the thesis statement of this take on Sherlock is, you know, if this person exists in our world today, all the things that he's able to do, the technology that's at his service, one of these days, because we're all overstimulated and desensitized,
mm-hmm.
someone who's that intelligent will one day go too far because society enables him to do so in a very public fashion.
I'm glad that Sally said that to John so far, so right off the bat in the series, that hopefully she said it in a way to make sure John's the one that keeps Sherlock in check.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that he doesn't, that Sherlock doesn't cross that line, and that's John's responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen.
I think that's an excellent point, because John's influence, I think, is very much the reason why Sherlock hasn't gone too far.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's he's the conscience of Sherlock in a way,
mm-hmm.
I think.
I 100% agree with that.
He's Sherlock's Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you know what's another thing that I loved about this episode that's another seed that got planted? Is the story of Mrs. Hudson's husband.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes.
And we later find
just
out
a little tidbit
who he is and what he did. But in this episode, even so far ahead of time, we find out that, you know, he was on trial with the death penalty and Sherlock made sure that he got killed. So Mrs. Hudson must have been pretty afraid of him to want him dead.
Right.
And another thing they set up that comes, you know, full circle in the Reichenbach Fall is the fact that basically nobody on the police is a big fan of Sherlock, because he's always kind of upstaging them and off doing his own thing and basically just generally making them look bad. And I think it's very interesting that, you know, our two cops that are Lestrade's right-hand man and woman are the two that will end up coming to him and making him doubt Sherlock in the Reichenbach Fall, mm-hmm. just like Moriarty planned.
Yeah, and if you think about it, yes, the police don't like Sherlock right off the bat, but Sherlock, he does it in a way that he's also insulting them. And he says all these lines, "What's it like to be in your mind? It must be so boring." You know, he says all these lines that purposely spites them. And especially when he was calling out Anderson and sleeping with the girls.
Yeah, with Donovan.
That was purely out of spite.
Oh, yeah. When he talked about the state of her knees, watching that again, I'm like, oh!
Yeah.
I completely forgot that happened.
Sherlock is really smart. And there are other things other than just always upstaging the police force is that he purposely insults them as well while he's working.
He was being kind of a dick.
Exactly.
kind of.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, such a dick.
That's over the line. It's crossing the line. You don't talk about the state of a woman's knees. It's not his place.
Well, again, he has to be Mr. Superior over everybody. And again, due to his inferiority complex, he has to laud it over everybody. And it's easy to see why that would make him a lot of enemies and why that would come back to bite him later on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It helps him with his ego.
It does. I love the moment where they go into Baker Street for the first time, and John's like, this place has a lot of promise. If we just clear out the rubbish, just as Sherlock's like, I agree. That's why I moved all my stuff in. Oh. And we also, I like seeing it how it was before John even moves in, and then how it evolves over the course of these three seasons, where we have John living there, we have John moved out, we have, you know, John kind of settling back in mm-hmm. in this third season. His chair is different. You know, Sherlock was making messes in his kitchen lab even mm-hmm. as early as then. How could John possibly survive in that environment?
I have thought a lot about this.
Okay.
And the first place we see John living, he has nothing.
Yeah. He's Spartan. He's a warrior.
He's a hermit, more so. His gun, his cane, and his computer. So when he moves in, he brings a gun, a cane, and a computer. That's all he needs. So Sherlock's crafting.
And even by the end, he doesn't need the cane anymore.
Yeah. And the gun, he uses it, and I think he's done with it.
Yeah.
So all he needs is the computer. When he moves in with Sherlock, he doesn't bring anything. I think that's why he can live with all this crap, because he doesn't have any. I think if he had his whole life.
What about
with him,
the kitchen? Human eyes in the microwave?
Yeah, you take
and
them
out.
And
there's a head in the fridge later on.
You take it out. You put what you need in. You use the microwave. You put it back.
And also, if you think about it, John was a war doctor. He was in the field. They're known to make things out of anything.
True.
And he can get by with little amounts of stuff. So.
True.
Yeah, I think if he can survive in Afghanistan, he can survive in the war zone that is Sherlock's apartment.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to this other dude who went to Bart's? He never shows up
Mike?
Again. Yeah, Mike.
I was wondering that. Yeah. It's like we meet him, we get a full name.
Yeah.
That's it.
Nothing ever again. Dude goes back to leaving a perfectly normal, boring life. And we never really got to explain how he knew Sherlock.
Yeah, I was wondering that as
well. Or why he would be at the morgue testing stuff.
Do you think that maybe they had planned, like, that was part of the original pilot, that they had planned to set something up with him, and then it just kind of fell through? It never came to fruition?
I have to watch it again. It's been a while since I watched the original pilot, and I'm very, very curious to watch it again now that we're having all this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Molly. We don't have tons of time, and I feel like we've covered a lot of it, but it's just so sad, their whole interaction.
It broke my heart the first time around. And again, it's after everything that's happened, it's kind of like, it's just as painful, if not more so.
I love how it's framed. She asks him out for coffee, and she's got this confidence to her. And I'm like, go you, get it, girl. And then and then he shuts her down with impunity. And then the next shot, she looks so tiny next to this dead body. And I'm just like, oh. You little poor little thing, you. I just want you to be happy.
I want her to be happy.
She deserves it.
With Lestrade.
Get it, Greg. I mean, get it, girl. I mean, get it, all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else anyone else wants to talk about?
I wanted to mention John's sister, Harriet.
Yes, Harry. We still haven't seen, Harry wasn't at the wedding.
Harry was not at the wedding.
No,
and I think
no.
that they set up that they're, you know, they don't talk. There was all this problems and whatever mm-hmm. With her alcoholism. But I was really surprised that she wasn't at the wedding.
Yeah.
And I wonder if she'll ever come back or if she's like Sean from Boy Meets World's sister who disappeared.
Or I think there was a character in Frasier that they always mentioned, but never was actually there.
Hmm.
I think I don't know. I might be remembering that wrong.
Right.
Maybe she's like that.
It's mm-hmm. a classic television trope, Marissa.
Or maybe they'll in season 4 they might reveal.
I hope
Harry.
So. That mm-hmm. would be great.
I mean, mm-hmm. because if you think about it, season 3 we kind of got a flashback of their family, Sherlock's family. So hopefully, because the fan base has, you know, grown so much that we can handle more characters. If they brought in a Harry character,
yeah.
that'd be interesting.
Well,
Harry
and she's going
like
to have a nephew or a niece
exactly.
pretty soon. Too.
She may not like ceremonies, but she's got to meet her own blood.
Yeah.
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 I hope we get to meet her.
I hope we get to meet her, too, and she gets wrapped up in a mystery. It's wonderful.
Yep.
All right. Anything else?
I just got to say, I loved the how they introduce, how Sherlock deducts everything from John is the first acquaintance to the woman in pink on the floor. Just like how they just establish how Sherlock thinks and how he breaks down people. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, it becomes a staple for the rest of the series.
Yeah, it really sets up the tone of how Sherlock thinks and the pace of all all the murders and mysteries that goes
on. And the movie and the show came out at around the same time as the Robert Downey Jr. film.
Yeah. Well, the first Robert Downey Jr. film came out in 2009, I believe.
Okay. Well, it might have been
2000.
It came out late 2009. This came out early 2010. So it was soon thereafter, and I've always preferred the way that modern Sherlock does it compared to those movies. Mm-hmm. I like the way that it's represented. I like that it's visual. And it's just a heck of a lot of fun.
I agree.
I love how it's evolved. All right. I think that's going to be enough for us tonight. We've got another show tomorrow talking about The Blind Banker, the off-maligned, perhaps misunderstood second episode of Sherlock.
Yeah.
and we're gonna break it down for you right here on AfterBuzz TV. Yael Teagle, where can the people find you?
The people can find me online at yael.tv. That's YAEL.TV. And on Twitter and Instagram at Yael Teagle, YAELTYGIEL. And right here on AfterBuzz, with Lost Girl and Grimm and House of Lies and Arrow and the Tomorrow People, pretty much every night of the week.
Wow. Now, Megan Salinas, I have a very personal question for you. Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. You can also find me here at AfterBuzz on Almost Human and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right. Now, Marissa Serafini, you've been with this network since practically the beginning.
For a while.
For a very long time. I don't think that anyone's asked you this really and truly, honestly, right here on the air. Where can the people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at SerafiniTV. You can follow me on Anatomy of a Movie podcast. We do AfterBuzz TV, but for movies, it's fun. You should definitely check that out. And, I'm on random different shows here. A lot of them are on hiatus right now because the Olympics and whatnot, but I'm here every single day. So I'm
wonderful.
I'm not that hard to find.
So
honestly.
Visit her on the chat roll, why don't you?
Yeah.
Or send her a nice tweet. Folks, you can find me, if you should so choose, on the Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can find me here at AfterBuzz TV. Whole bunch of shows. Helix and Lost Girl on Sci-Fi. Lost Girl with Yael Teagle.
Yep.
Megan Salinas, I'm on Agents S.H.I.E.L.D. and Almost Human with you. I got Cougar Town. I got Justified. I got Banshee on Cinemax. Great show. You should be watching all these shows. And if you want to watch live comedy, you live in the L.A. area, here's what you do. You go to the I.O. West Comedy Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, 6366 Hollywood Boulevard, and I perform there the first Sunday of every month at 9 p.m. as a member of DJ Fawcett. Next show is going to be on March 9th at 9 p.m., but we're also doing a very special late-night sketch cage match show next Monday night at 11 p.m. We need audience support, audience participation to help us beat this other team because we're pretty amazing.
A cage match?
Oh, yeah. It's a cage match. Okay. It's a battle. Oh, a comedy battle to the death.
Sounds like a war.
Yeah, it's a comedy war.
Sounds intense.
Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. Blind Banker. Stay tuned. Love you all. Peace.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
Thank you for watching AfterBuzz TV on YouTube. For more of your favorite after shows and interviews, subscribe to our channel here. And be sure to share your opinion on the episode in the comment section below here. We'd love to see what you guys are buzzing about. Thanks again. Buzz you later.